It's that time of the week to take a walk on the sledge side of the tracks in Mr. Sledge's neighborhood, where the grass may be green, but it's still patchy and weed-infested. It's a good thing Monsanto is sponsoring this week's episode. So sit back, listen to this vintage commercial for Roundup Weed Killer.
You still there, Hank?
Yeah, kid.
They sprayed us good, huh?
These are supposed to be dandelions talking.
Yeah, good.
Oh, I never thought we'd get sprayed in the garden. But we'll be okay, huh?
No, you won't, anthropomorphized weed. No, you won't.
I mean, we've been sprayed before, huh, Hank?
Obviously not by an herbicide that has glyphosate in it, which specifically inhibits the enzyme that is essential for plant growth.
Sure, kid.
But I gotta tell you, my roots hurt real bad. Hank, whoever did this is gonna pay. Hank, they're gonna pay big.
Well, that all depends upon the size of the garden now, doesn't it?
Hank! Hank!
Roundup kills weeds where others can't. Roundup, no root, no weed, no problem.
Monsanto killing adorable talking plants since 1974. And now the news! In cheating is still cheating even by another name news, Pokemon Go developer Niantic appears to have opened up a new front in its ongoing war against third-party tools and trackers that use bot accounts to reveal where in-game Pokemon are hiding in the real world. Players are reporting that detected and flagged accounts are being limited so they can only see common Pokemon, not the most coveted rarer beast. Pokemon Go Hub reported that a new security measure earlier this week showing screenshots where two different accounts of the exact same location showed different Pokemon on their nearby list. The site estimates that tens to hundreds of thousands of accounts may have been blinded in this way, based on reports from inside Pokemon Go hacking community. That said, reports suggest that enforcement has been somewhat sporadic, with some of the botters claiming zero accounts blinded and others reporting complete annihilation of their account farm, according to Pokemon Go Hub. And while bot makers create free new accounts to try to get around the blinding, the Silk Road subreddit groups that made new accounts may seem to be blinded quickly and automatically, signaling a change from the more manual ban waves Niantic has issued to bot makers periodically. Some suspect Niantic is making use of machine learning algorithms to detect bots quickly while limiting false positive punishments on legitimate accounts. Without knowing, Niantic has developed a code that will lead to Skynet and the future subjugation of the human race. Before our robot overlords take over and force us all to get nerve stapled, it'll be nice to know that those damn dirty cheaters can only see Pidgeys, or whatever the hell a common Pokemon is these days. I mean, at least they haven't gone crazy with advertisements yet, right? Right?
My mom said it's on some Asian website.
Your mom is really tech savvy. That is so hot. Why did I say that?
Oh, look! There he is! Oh, you're cute!
No more Biru! Yum, yum!
What is he doing?
I don't know. It looks like it's...
Kodomo Biru!
Yum, yum!
An ad.
Yum, yum!
For beer.
Yum, yum!
Kodomo Biru!
For children.
In I Can't Believe They Brought Back Gold Kryptonite Reviews, I finally returned home from the Midwest and got a chance to sit down with Injustice 2. Having devoted a lot of time and money to the previous NetherRealm's installation into the comic book fighting game universe, I had high expectations. You'll be happy to know that most of those expectations have been met. If you're unfamiliar, why are you listening to this podcast? And here's a brief primer. Injustice Gods Among Us debuted in 2013 for PS3 and Xbox 360. The story revolves around an alternate Earth Justice League where the Joker dupes Superman into blowing up Metropolis and killing his pregnant wife Lois. Stricken with grief, Big Blue put his hand through the Joker's chest, crossing the line that he swore he would never cross. This became the birth of the Regime, an organization headed by Superman uniting the world's governments under the strict rule of martial law. Superman utilizes both heroes and villains to do his bidding, but he wasn't afraid to get his hands dirty either. It became easier for Supes to kill people, including Oliver Queen, right in front of Ma and Pa Kent, nonetheless. Over time, he had imprisoned or killed most of the heroes that weren't on his payroll. His best friend Lex Luthor and his former best friend Bruce Wayne began to have misgivings about the whole endeavor, and they needed help to stop the Regime. Enlisting extra-dimensional help from a Justice League from New Earth and using Lex Luthor's super pills to beef up the mortals to Superman-level strength and endurance, Batman successfully toppled the Regime and imprisoned Superman. Over the past 5 years, DC has also released hundreds of comics in this universe for only 99 cents an issue. but I recommend getting the hardcover books for about $15 a pop. Year 5, Volume 3 comes out this June. The comics go in depth about what led up to the first game, and now there's even an Injustice 2 series of books doing the same for the sequel. Injustice 2 picks up years after Injustice 1 left off. Bruce Wayne is publicly known as Batman and is celebrated and vilified as the person who took down the regime and Superman. But there is a new threat on the horizon, and the loyalties will be tested and signs will be drawn and redrawn when Brainiac invades Earth. I won't ruin the story, but I will say that there are multiple endings and even an alternate ending if you completed every single possible choice the story mode gives you. After the story mode, there is a multiverse mode where you can play single-player missions across the multiverse while upgrading characters through gadgets, armor, and special attack boosts. These boosts can also be used in multiplayer too, where levels and ranking have become the be-all and end-all of fighting game leaderboards at this point. The game is pretty, facial expressions are at times exaggerated, but these are larger than life heroes, so that's fitting. The dialogue can be cheesy at times, but it's a comic book game, and that's also fitting. The only real problem I have with this game is what most people might not consider a problem, the fight mechanics. This is a Mortal Kombat game with several layers of superhero skin, shiny veneer, and toned-down violence. I was never a fan of the blocky, shoulder-strutting look that the NetherRealm's fighting system gave us. It always felt clunky. Now, so does Tekken, and I still play that game too. It's just not my favorite fighting system. I prefer fluid fighting systems produced by Namco or Arc Systems. Soul Calibur and Blaze Blue are my jams, but it's not everybody else's, and that's not a bad thing, it's just preference. That said, I completed the story mode in about 5 hours on normal difficulty, and it's a whole hell lot longer than most fighting games are, and the cinematography is top-notch, which you also don't see in fighting games anymore. So, you know what? I'll give this game a 9 out of 10 Crushed Helmets of Naboo.
The Germans are worried about working with us because, ironically, they think that Viridian is ruthlessly efficient and bent on world domination.
Wow. That's like when those Irish auditors thought our accounting department drank too much and wrote overly depressing poetry.
Well, maybe you could put away some of your especially evil creations, you know, in case they want to see the lab.
Evil? We don't create evil things.
Some might see this long-range people-skinning laser as evil-ish.
That was only designed so you could peel an orange in your kitchen while sitting comfortably in your living room.
Well, now it's used to peel enemy soldiers overseas while you sit comfortably at the Pentagon.
Well, what about this translator device? That's going to make it easier for people to talk to each other. And with the exception of almost everything my wife ever says to me, communication is always good.
Well, actually, the military is also going to use it to interrogate prisoners. Listen, just to be safe, why don't we clear everything away, except the ficus.
You mean a man-eating ficus?
All right, I'll just try to keep the Germans upstairs.
I'm back, Wheel of Insanity. Why don't you do that voodoo that you do so well? It says, talk science-y to me. Jeez, that's a broad topic. I'll admit, when I tend to go off on wild science-laced tangents, I tend to put people to sleep. Just ask my wife. The first time I tried explaining special relativity to her while we were dating, she fell asleep. Yes, I'm surprised she stuck with me, but I'm happy to report she now understands STR after I used Jell-O and raisins as a metaphor for space-time and mass. So, how about I try talking about something extremely weird? Quantum foam. But to understand quantum foam, you need to understand Planck units, or at the very least, Planck length and Planck time. So tell me, what do you think of when I ask you to think of nothing? This is a podcast. I can't hear your response. But I bet you're thinking of blackness, you racist. No? Emptiness? Void? Space? A complete vacuum? Nothing is literally not a thing. I mean, that is the etymology of the English word, nothing. We as humans have a hard time conceptualizing the zero, so we even use it as a number, making it something. I'm not trying to be esoteric, well, maybe a little, but if you can measure it, doesn't it mean it's not nothing? Now, say an alien civilization comes for a visit and they want to share some of their knowledge with us. They tell us that their star system is 80 glyphnorgs away from Earth. What the hell is a glyphnorg? I mean, while we work in base 10 systems because our ancestors counted with their hands, doesn't mean our visitors have 10 tentacles. We'd have to end up explaining what a meter is. Fortunately, we've thought of that. We want something that is universally the same in every location. A meter is the distance a photon travels in 1,299,792,458 of a second in a vacuum at 1 G. You can therefore define a second as the time it takes for a photon to cover 299,792,458 meters. Over 100 years ago, a German by the name of Max Karl Ernst Ludwig Planck created the field of modern quantum physics. I say modern for all you Aristotelian apologists out there. Now, Max was concerned about having universal units to work with and developed super-specific units based on the observable world. Well, not really observable, more mathematical. Let me give you an example. Planck's length is defined as 1.6162298 to 10 to the negative 39th meters. Yeah, that's small. So small we can't see it. We've only begun to magnify up to 10 to the negative 18th meters, and that is still super small. To put it in perspective, if you were to take a single hydrogen atom and increase that to the size of the observable universe, then Planck's length would be no bigger than your average telephone pole. It's essentially the distance light travels in Planck time. You can imagine how short that is. Now, mathematically, things can get pretty funky at that scale. Things like vacuum energy exist. In quantum mechanics, and in particular quantum field theory, Heisenberg uncertainty principle allows energy to briefly decay into particles and antiparticles when they annihilate back to energy without violating physical conservation laws, like the second law of thermodynamics, for instance. As time and space are being probed at smaller scales, the energy of such particles, called virtual particles, increases. Combining this observation with the fact that Einstein's theory of general relativity energy curves space-time. One can imagine that at sufficiently small scales, the energy of these fluctuations would be large enough to cause significant departures from the smooth spacetime seen at macroscopic scales, giving spacetime a foamy character. All this creation and annihilation of matter and antimatter is of great interest because it's literally being spawned by, quote, nothing. There's that word again. Something that during the first nanosecond of the universe after the Big Bang might have created conditions for rapid expansion. But what is really odd is that we seem to get antimatter at all, since we are living in a matter-filled universe. General relativity predicts that energy is equivalent to mass, and therefore, if the vacuum energy is really there, it should exert a gravitational force. Essentially, a non-zero vacuum energy is expected to contribute to the cosmological constant, which affects the expansion of the universe. Quantum theory of a vacuum further stipulates that the pressure from a non-zero state vacuum energy is always negative. If indeed the vacuum ground state is non-zero energy, the calculation implies that repulsive gravitational field giving rise to the acceleration of the expansion of the universe, which had been crazy to suggest until 1998, when astronomers discovered that not only the universe was expanding, but accelerating its expansion for some reason, which cosmologists have chalked up to dark energy. But this wasn't always the case. Gravity was slowing down the universe's expansion, as one would expect, until about 5 billion years ago. Then it seems like a switch was flipped. Could the foamy emptiness of space-time create enough vacuum energy which might make enough antigravitons, which incidentally is a graviton, to push apart the galaxies? Intriguing thought, no? Vacuum energy is mathematically infinite without renormalization, which is based on the assumption that we can only measure energy in a relative sense, which is not true if we can observe it indirectly via the cosmological constant. This is heady stuff to be sure, and there hasn't been any consensus on the existence of quantum foam since the 1950s. Like the proponents of quantum leap gravity and string theory like to point out, the more we look into these things, the more complicated and convoluted they seem to become. Efforts to solve one problem in cosmology often open up a Pandora's box in others. For instance, speculation about the universe immediately after the Big Bang lead almost inevitably to considerations of what came before. One hypothesis is that the cosmos originate from nothing. There's that word again. Or it may be that there are countless universes materialized out of empty space. The key to such assertions lies in the nature of nothingness. If that nothingness is a vacuum, that is an inherently unstable condition. During the Planck era, that is to say, the first unit of Planck time at the start of the universe, foamy space-time bubbles formed. Some would appear and disappear or annihilate each other. Maybe one, just one in a multitude of possibilities, expanded into what we know as the universe. Maybe there are other bubbles that formed from that era and spawn something else, yet ultimately unreachable from our own space-time.
Anyway, I've devised a formula.
Look at that. You had a problem in your life, and who stepped up to help you? Math. She has always been there for you, hadn't she, Phil?
If she ever took physical form, I'd leave my wife and marry her.
Stand in line, my friend.
That's all I have for this week's episode of Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. Why not give one of our sponsors a try and visit Loot Crate from the CourtOfNerds.com? Get a kickback, and one day Ben might be able to get paid to watch WCW in his underwear all day. I'm Kevin, reminding you that death is but a door, time is but a window. I will be back. Must have been something you said. I just died.